Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I'll discuss with you some of what I've been reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. This is fifth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. In the fifth canto, we find a discussion between Jodhbharat and King Rahugana. You can hear in the back? Okay. Jodhbharat was the reincarnation of Maharaj Bharat, who had been the king of the world. Bharat was the son of King Rishabhdev, and after ruling the kingdom for many years, not that many actually, he gave it up and renounced the kingdom, handing it over to his son, and went off to the forest to cultivate Krishna consciousness. Unfortunately, somehow or other, he became deviated from his meditation by attraction to a small deer cub. The deer's mother was threatened by a lion, and sought to escape by crossing a river. But out of exhaustion, when the deer reached the opposite shore, the deer died. But first, the deer gave birth prematurely to a little deer cub. And Maharaj Bharat, seeing this, saw that the deer had no one to protect it. So he took up the responsibility. He took charge of the deer and brought the deer to his ashram. But the result was that while doing his meditation, he was always thinking about the deer. Is the deer all right? What's going on with the deer? The deer is so, well, now we would say cute, so adorable and so affectionate. The deer is like a great pious soul. The deer makes the whole earth fortunate and auspicious by its footprints. He was always thinking about the deer, thinking about the deer, thinking about the deer. He would sit down for meditation, but he would think about the deer. So, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajajyante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kanteya sada tadbhava bhavita. Whatever one thinks of determines one's next destination. So, at the time of death, Maharaj Bharat was transferred to the body of a deer. But as a deer, he was blessed by Krishna with remembrance of his previous life. He knew why he'd become a deer. So he became very serious and went off to Haridwar to associate with great sages. He went off to Haridwar to associate with great sages. And in his next birth, he took birth as the son of a Brahmin. But in order to avoid becoming entangled again, although he was highly intelligent and great self-realized soul. He covered himself in such a way as to seem foolish and dull. His father would try to teach him how to chant Gayatri Mantra on his fingers. He would get the thing, he couldn't get it right. And everything that his father tried to teach him, he couldn't do properly. So he pretended to be like a dull fool, although he was the most intelligent. And this way, he avoided entanglement in materialistic activities. You can hear all right in the back still? Okay. One day it just so happened that there was one king passing by, King Ruhugana. And his palanquin carriers were missing one man. I don't know whether the man got sick or he left or he died, but anyway, they were missing a man. So they had to recruit someone. And they saw this man, Jodhpadat, as he was called. He looked very stout and strong. And he wasn't doing anything. His brothers used to leave him just out in the field to practically do nothing. So they thought, here's a good man to add to the group of palanquin carriers. So they pressed him into service. But while walking, carrying the palanquin, he would be watching to see whether there were any ants on the path. And if there were any ants, then he would try to walk in such a way as to avoid them, not to step on them. So naturally, the other palanquin carriers, they weren't doing that, only he was doing that. So the result was that the ride became very jerky. And the king started to complain. Hey, what are you guys doing? Palanquin carriers said, we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, but this new man, he's going this way and that way. So the king made some sarcastic remarks, rebuking them, and especially rebuking this new man. Then they started again, and then again it was jerking. Again he criticized them, that you appear to be very stout and strong, but looks like you don't know what you're doing. Anyway, then Jodhpadat answered the king in such a way . He said, you know, you and I are made of the same thing. You're made of earth, and I'm made of earth. So the earth is carrying the earth, but one manifestation of earth has a crown on his head and thinks that he's the king, and another manifestation of earth is being treated as the palanquin carrier. And you're talking about my being very strong or stout. I'm not strong or weak. I'm not this or that because I'm not this body. So in this way he was speaking. I'm only giving a short summary. And Ruhugana could understand, he's a great soul. And I've committed an offense, first of all by having him as my palanquin carrier, and second of all by rebuking him. So understanding that he defended a great devotee, the king fell at his lotus feet and begged forgiveness and asked to receive transcendental instructions. So, in the course of those instructions, Jodhpada told an allegorical story about a merchant, a merchant who goes into the forest to look for stuff. His idea would be that he'll go into the forest and he'll find some things that he can pick up at no cost, and then he can sell them at a profit. In business, we try to buy low and sell high. So the merchant went into the forest to find something that he could use for selling and making money. But in the course of that expedition into the forest, so many things happened to him. He's attacked by different animals. He falls into a hole from which he can't get out. There's so many owls and crickets that are making threatening sounds. He's in the darkness of the night. So many different things are troubling him. He gets stung by bees. He gets grabbed by a python. So his expedition into the forest for getting profit so that he can make some money and live very nicely becomes a nightmare. This story was told by Jodhpada to Ruhugana Maharaj. So then the Ruhugana Maharaj said that I can understand that there's another meaning to the story. So if you could please explain what that meaning is. And Ruhugana Maharaj, Jodhpada explained that this whole material world is like a big forest to which the soul who has forgotten his relationship to Krishna enters to find enjoyment. It's the forest of material enjoyment. And particularly in this forest, one enters into householder life with the expectation of enjoying a very nice life. Enjoying a very nice life. And one doesn't know that that very nice life means there'll be so many problems. He just needs to get a simple occupation and make some money and live happily with his wife and children and family members. But there are so many problems. Maharaj Bharat says there are six plunderers. Naturally, we go to the forest or we go out into the business world. We work very hard to make some money. But if our money gets stolen, then we're in great distress. I worked so hard to make money, and now the money is lost. So the Jodhpada said there are six plunderers that attack the merchant. And he explains that these six plunderers are the five senses and the mind. We're working very hard, but we don't know what our own self-interest is. Instead of working for our own self-interest, we're working for the demands of the senses, which are never satisfied. We have to keep working and working to satisfy the senses, and the senses never say, "Thank you very much. Now I'm satisfied." They say, "Well, I'm sorry, but that I want more. Bring me more. Bring me more." So these six plunderers are there. And there are another set of plunderers. He's also attacked by jackals and other animals. And don't mind, but Judd Bruddett says these are like his family members. There's an expression in Bengali, legitimate burglars. If we take so much pain to protect our home against burglars, I spend a fair amount of time in Africa, and in Africa there are you have to make very serious, like in India, you make serious security arrangements so that no one can come and plunder your property. But living in the house, there's another set of burglars called legitimate burglars. Those are the wife and children. The man is working very hard to make money, and the wife and children are very expert in extracting that money for various purposes. And the man is thinking, "I'm very fortunate. My wife loves me. My children love me." But actually, they're taking away all of his hard-earned capital. Sometimes the man is stung by bees, and that's described as he's not satisfied at home. He wants to find some other woman, and because his senses are uncontrolled, he goes chasing after that other woman. But then the family members of that woman catch up with him and beat him. So he's stung very severely. He associates with, of course, in the forest there are so many monkeys, and the monkeys are also very destructive. So he becomes associated with persons who are addicted to sinful activities, intoxication, meat eating, illicit sex, gambling. And in this way also, he becomes like a monkey himself, swinging from branch to branch, or from club to club. Sometimes he meets he's looking for a place to get some, he's very hot, exhausted, he wants to take a bath in a river. And sometimes he finds a river and dives in, but then he finds out that it's a very shallow river, and so he cracks his head. And this is compared to taking shelter of bogus gurus. There are so many bogus gurus who are also ready to cheat the conditioned souls. All you need is this. All you need is that. And I'll take your money and you'll be very lucky. In this way, so many descriptions are there. Let's see, a few more. Oh yeah, just as there are owls and crickets in the forest, so there's which give fear and trouble. So there are government men. That's another source of trouble. All I want to do is get a little something, make a little money, and be happy. But the government men are there waiting to pounce on me and grab my money in the form of, sometimes in the form of bribes and extortion, or simply in the form of taxes. The income tax, inheritance tax, property tax, sales tax, airport tax, this tax, that tax. And government men are very expert in finding ways to impose taxes. So that I think that I saw some figure to the effect that if you're working for a year, half the year you're just working for the government, paying the taxes. Dasyu prayeshu rajasu, especially in Kali Yuga, the kings or leaders are like dasyus, plunderers. Sometimes one becomes smitten by distress. He's out of money. He's in trouble. So then, just to maintain, of course, everyone's trying to exploit everyone else in this forest. But sometimes, just to maintain, he takes whatever he can from his own relatives, from his brother, from his son, from his father, taking their property also. Prabhupada said he knew of one man who was in such distress that he stole ornaments from his daughter. So this is how nice things are in this forest. The family life, therefore, Prabhupada said, in the material world is like a blazing forest fire. And one is looking for happiness, but one is getting burnt up. There's a great hill that one has to climb. And Prabhupada said, or Bhagavatam says, that this is like the hill of so many fruitive activities that one is obliged to perform. So many ceremonies, so many religious rituals, especially vivaha yajna, very costly business, very expensive and troublesome. It was like climbing a great hill. Sometimes he's become so disturbed that he becomes angry at his own wife, his own sons, his own daughters, and becomes short with them. And then after being unkind to them, he feels even greater suffering. On and on it goes. Sometimes he steals from others and then he gets arrested. So then here's the conclusion, or one conclusion, which is where I'm up to today. Atacha tasmad uvayatapi hi karmasmin atmanaha samsaravapanam udavaharanti. Learned scholars and transcendentalists therefore condemn the materialistic path of fruitive activity because it is the original source and breeding ground of material miseries, both in this life and in the next. Purport. Not knowing the value of life, karmis create situations whereby they suffer in this life and the next. Unfortunately, karmis are very attached to material sense gratification, and they cannot appreciate the miserable condition of material life, neither in this life nor in the next. Therefore, the Vedas enjoin that one should awaken to spiritual consciousness and utilize all his activities to attain the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yat karoshi yadashnashi yajjuhoshi didashi yat yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurusha madarpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. The results of all one's activities should be utilized not for sense gratification, but for the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord gives all information in Bhagavad Gita about the aim of life, and at the end of Bhagavad Gita, he demands surrender unto him. People do not generally like this demand, but one who cultivates spiritual knowledge for many births eventually surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Bahunam janmanamante ganavan mam prapadyate. The summary is that we're looking for happiness in this material world by various arrangements, and there simply isn't happiness here. What we do for happiness subjects us to so much distress. And so at best we could say that we have mixed happiness and distress. But mixed happiness and distress is distress. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of kheer, sweet rice. It's very nice, very tasty, sweet, nutritious. Now you add, say, one spoonful of sand. Now how do you like it? The people say, well, you know, that's life. You take the good with the bad. But would we do that? Would we say, yes, all right, anyway, it's sweet. Anyway, it's nutritious. A little sand, anyway. Take the good with the bad. Good with the bad means bad. Happiness and distress means distress. And it's not only a little distress, but the purpose of Maharaj of Jodhpurat's narration is to bring to our attention how much distress there is for how little supposed happiness. We're working so hard, going through so much trouble, and then there's this anxiety, there's that anxiety, the baby's vomiting, the wife is feeling unhappy, the neighbors are complaining, I've lost my job or I could lose my job. Either way, it's fear. The kid is outgrowing his shoes every 6 months and I have to buy new shoes and new shoes and new shoes. The price of petrol is going up. I have to sit in traffic for 2 hours to go simply to go to work and come back. All week long I'm working and working and working. And this is all for enjoyment. So how much enjoyment is there? And even the enjoyment, how enjoyable is the enjoyment? And even if I say it's enjoyable, it becomes the source of my attachment to this material world and repeated birth and death. And how enjoyable is birth and death? Because I'm attached to some kind of enjoyment, I have to come back and try for that enjoyment again and again in so many different 8,400,000 species of life, sometimes going up, sometimes going down. So the conclusive instruction is that one should surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should simply accept that the project for material enjoyment is a failure, that the prospects of enjoyment in the material world are, nil. Or even if we want to take a very favorable view, we could say that the return on investment is simply negligible, not worth it. And therefore, what do we do? If a project shows no hope of return on investment, then why should I keep investing? They say that's throwing good money after bad money, good energy after bad energy. It's already so much of loss, now why should I invest in further loss? So I should cut my losses and find some better enterprise. So the better enterprise is the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we should cut our losses, pull out of the project for material enjoyment, and engage ourselves in the service of Krishna. That will make us actually happy. All right, Hare Krishna. Are there some questions? If family members are such an impediment in progress, so what should we do? It depends where we are. If we haven't gotten married, then we should seriously consider not getting married. That we come to that next, but if somebody's not entered the forest and he gets the report, then better than thinking, well, that was his experience, but I'll make a profit, you should simply stay out. Now, if one is already in, that's the next question. It would be nice if we can pull out, but sannyasas tu mahabaho dukam dukayon. What is that? Dukam aptam ayogata. If we're not mature in Krishna consciousness, then simply leaving family responsibilities will lead to further miseries. We see that. That someone enters family life, and because he has a little spiritual understanding, he comes to understand, well, this is now so troublesome, such a burden. Or even without spiritual understanding, he sees it's so troublesome, such a burden. And then he wants out. But because his heart is not purified, he wants in again. Those who have no material, who are just on the material platform, they become distressed in family life. And under illusion, they think, if I get rid of this wife, then I'll be happy, I can find another wife. And that's about, 50% of the marriages in the West these days. Or in big cities like Delhi, even the numbers are similar. Bombay, Delhi. So people if married life is so nice, why do half the people want out of the marriage that they've entered into? So then they get out, but then after getting out, they want to get in, and what they get into is as bad as what they got into the first time, or worse. And therefore, the statistics are that for second marriages, the divorce rates are even higher. And after two marriages, you'd think that he would learn, but he leaves the second wife and gets a third one, and then the rates of disappointment are still higher than for second-timers. So how foolish are people? All right, so someone is not a materialist. He has some clue of Krishna consciousness, so he wants to leave his family life for spiritual realization. But if he's not mature, he leaves, and then after some time, he wants to come back. So he may accept even the renounced order, but then he becomes unhappy. He thinks, maybe I should go back to my wife. She needs me. How will she go on without me? I should go back. I was foolish. Or he thinks, well, I was foolish to have taken sannyas when this beautiful girl is there and she loves me. I can see by the way she's looking at me that she's attracted. And if I spoke to her, then maybe something. So although he leaves family life for spiritual advancement or Krishna consciousness, again, he goes back to the same thing. Well, that's that becomes worse. Therefore, Krishna says, sannyasastu mahabaho dukkham aptama yogat. For one who's not genuinely Krishna consciousness, simply sannyas is not the answer. It will lead to more distress. Therefore, one is recommended that, all right, live in householder life, but don't expect any enjoyment there. We entered householder life for enjoyment, but that's non-existent. It's a trap. There's not actually happiness, because it's all in relationship to this material body. And the happiness from this material body means distress. So then, the being enlightened in this way, one should go on with his householder duties, but without attachment. Without attachment. Externally, he does what he has to do. He does his work. He smiles at his wife. He pats his kids on the head. He's a very good family man. But internally, he thinks that this is all dukkhalayam ashashvatam. This is not a source of happiness. And even if I think it's a source of happiness, it's temporary anyway. So what is the use? So inwardly, he becomes detached. And outwardly also, instead of spending for a bigger house and more facility and building up his establishment, he tries to engage everything in the service of Krishna. Kamasya nendriya pritir labhu jiveta yabhata jivasya tatva jagyasa nartayas chayakarmibi. He understands that the real business of life is spiritual realization. So he just takes his minimum needs and dedicates his real energy for the service of Krishna. Then in the mature stage also, that's in his family life, but family life is not eternal. One will be removed from family life by the forces of time. And one is advised that rather than being forcibly evicted by death, one should voluntarily retire from family life. So after the grahastha ashram, the Vanaprastha ashram is there, in which there's no sex, and one pulls out of material engagements and travels to holy places, associates with saintly people, practices austerity for getting free of the entanglements that accumulate in family life. And then in the mature stage, one is recommended to leave entirely by accepting the renounced order and fully engaging in the service of the Lord and spreading Krishna consciousness also for the benefit of others. Just change the desire. Develop Krishna desire.
Because man can get the man more want.
Yeah. So then change your desire. Now I want sense gratification. I desire more money, I desire more sex, I desire more nice eating, I desire a bigger house, I desire. And the more I desire, the more I want, the more I get, the more I want, and the more I have, the more I become dissatisfied. So, and stopping desire is not possible. Therefore, one should desire to serve Krishna. Then the more service you have, the more you'll want. That's good. The more you get, the more you actually become happy.
Sometimes I don't want much spending time behind the Krishna consciousness. So I try to chasing my dream, lots of things coming, one by one.
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand. Say again.
He has a dream of chasing the desire, right? Not behind the Lord and Krishna consciousness.
Well, therefore we have this chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, to purify our consciousness so that our desires will change. Is that all right? Something about the negativity of this material world. What? About the negativity? See, you don't have a cold, so you can be very loud.
Like what we heard from today's lecture, that showed that this material world is, so much misery is there. So that kind of negative thought comes in mind.
That's negative. That's intelligent. Just like in business, if there's, if a business prospect is negative, why should you think that it's positive? That's called foolishness. Sometimes we see that a man has started some business and the business is contrary to expectation, the customers are not coming, the expenses are higher than expected, the difficulties, unforeseen difficulties are there. He's running into debt, and he's thinking, well, I can make it. And then he borrows more, and he goes further into debt, and again borrows or steals or becomes desperate. That's foolishness. Better to see that the indicators are negative. The expenses are high, the profit is low, the number of customers is small, the management is tremendous. So all the indicators are negative. That means I'm going to go broke. The intelligent person pulls out as early as possible and cuts his losses. And the fool thinks, I think I can. Just keep a positive attitude. What is that in Bhagavatam? in Bhagavad Gita. Asat Grahit. Let's see. Grihit vasad grahan. Kama mashra chadushpuram dambamanam adanvita. Mohad grihit vasad grahan pravartante shujivrita. The demons, kama mashra chadushpuram, they just take shelter of their unlimited material desires, which are insatiable, which they can't fulfill. Instead of taking shelter of Krishna, he takes shelter of so many hopes and dreams for enjoyment. Dambamana madanvita. He's arrogant, proud, and crazy. Mohat grihit vasadgran. Mohat means, can you hear still? Yes or no? No. Barely. Okay, let's see if I can. Mohad. Mohad. Yeah. Yeah.